This is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. It is our great pleasure and privilege to be with Robert A.G. Monks. We're talking about corpocracy, the concept, having been privileged to read the book where you codify many of these things. Bill Russell and I both thoroughly enjoyed reading it. I actually thought it was quite a page turner because it is relevant, it is important, it speaks to lots of things that are fundamental to who and what we are, both personally and as a society. And then there is this time and time again, I'd say page turner, I think, but in America, the idea that the individual has property rights and owns things, and that is, can I say, sacred in America, and yet the idea of personal property rights goes away when you're talking about corpocracy versus a democracy.
You know, this is, I hope I'm given the gift of clarity in language, but when you talk about property, you're clearly talking about something quite different between owning a horse and owning a share of stock. And part of the genius of the corporate scheme is that the owner of a piece of stock has limited liability. His liability is limited to what his investment is.
Which is a good thing.
It's a good thing, except when you go to him and you say, you as a shareholder ought to do the right thing. He looks at you and says, I've just talked to my lawyer and he tells me I don't have to do anything. You know, I have limited liability. Now, about 20 years ago, the penny dropped for me, and I discovered that a majority of the shareholders of American companies were trustees. And they can't just do nothing. They are obligated to take action in order to protect and enhance the trust property.
Legally obligated.
Legally obligated. And so therefore, you now can talk about at least the trustee owners must take appropriate action to enhance the value of the trust estate.
It's also worth saying that this limited liability is part of the deal that allows a corporation to exist.
Absolutely.
And we forget that is the case, that there's a trade-off here.
So it's hard, you know, conceptually, to begin talking about responsibility, because the essence of the arrangement is that their responsibility is limited to their investment. So what we're introducing here by virtue of the emergence of the trustee as the majority owner is the beginning of an ethical ownership culture based on trust law. And so it's a way in which you can go beyond the limitations that you'd have if you had only individual owners.
Let me step way back. When I got through reading your book, two things jumped out at me as central, and then all the flesh that goes around that, and as well as the recommendations, which are obviously very important. One is that there is a problem of in the context you're talking about kleptocracy,
mm-hmm.
As in kleptomania.
That people, because they have essentially unchecked power. Specifically, chief executives, basically chief executive, and that's who you pinpoint. That they are enriching themselves, their enrichment is coming out of the owner's pocket. You know, that's the first issue, which is really a question of legitimacy, a question of fairness, a question of justice. And we have laws, nominally, as you if you pointed out. The other issue is a longer term, and you've already referred to that, which is that ultimately this won't work. That it's throwing sand in the gears of a really neat system.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me both of those are very important. Mm-hmm. The first in terms of our relationship to the body politic of which we're a part and of which corporations are a very important part. And the other, of course, is our long-term economic, broadly speaking, economic well-being as a nation and as individuals.
And
as
a world.
And to a lesser extent, we're in less control of the world than we think we are, but to a lesser extent, the entire world.
Well, you know, when you raise the question of the world, it's another context, because historically, people have thought that the accountability of corporations was to the place where they live, to their domicile, the place that gave them their charter. And now you have a phenomenon like, take ExxonMobil.
Of which you are an owner.
An American company. Only 30% of ExxonMobil's earnings come from the United States. Mm-hmm. We've got to the place now where there's an asymmetry between the political source of power, which is the country, and the corporate source of power, which is the world. And so there's going to be the need to have institutions created that can function across countries on a global basis. And the fascinating balance here is that we've also had the emergence of the institutional investors who own stock all over the world. And so, in effect, the only pieces of the puzzle that are global, genuinely, are the owners and the managers.
You used the magic word balance. There is inherent balance available within the corporate structure as well as within the political structure. And when we get out of balance is when we get into big trouble.
That's the sand in the gears.
Well, I think the sand in the gears, no less an authority than the President of the United States this week, and this being
October 2007,
second week of October of 2007, the President is appalled, which is an interesting word for him to use, by the level of CEO pay, and he exhorts shareholders to take action. It's a fine sentiment, and I wish it were self-executing, but it is evidence of how serious the problem is and how much sand there is in the gears when someone who has been very much identified with sort of the business roundtable America, all its administration, should come out and say something like that about the members of the business roundtable.
You point out a statistic that I to me was crystallized in some ways what you're talking about, that over, I think it was in the 90s and the early 2000s, that something like 10% of the profits of American corporation had been transferred not to the owners, but to the chief executive officers,
right?
And it is a staggeringly large number. I think it's in the order of
in
excess
dollars.
Of $1 trillion,
yeah.
Which is now. Having said that, I mean, my first reaction is that's an outrage. My second reaction is that's an outrage. My third reaction is it's an outrage. My fourth reaction, though, is to try to see why this should even be possible. And that the argument, and I think this you must encounter this all the time, is that the shareholders are making so much money out of the stock market, and this goes to the sand in the gears piece, I think, that they're making so much money that if, 10%, essentially the skim off the top, the VIG, as you call it, vigorish, is okay because we get the other 90% and it's a great big pie, so, what's to worry about?
Well, I think I have one chart in the book, which I rather like, and let's start in 1992. And I start in 1992 because that's the year a wonderful book was written by a man named Bud Crystal called In Search of Excess. And it was all about Bud was a reformed compensation consultant.
Recovering?
Recovering.
Detoxing?
Just excellent. And he analyzes the situation in 1992 as being very bad. So we start the chart then. And we move in lines and show the cost of living, we show rise of the stock market, and we show the rise of CEO pay. Well, the rise of CEO pay is 225% of what the rise of the stock market is. I mean, it's just way out of sight. It is no correlation to it at all. And the difficulty has been that there has been no effort by anybody that has stopped this trend.
Although a couple of people have personally been able to say, that ain't right.
Well, there are some corporate leaders who have been absolutely splendid. I mean, I'm out of GE, you just have to say, is the nearest thing to a corporate statesman on the subject. And then Frank Blake taking over Home Depot. Just changed the ratio. It used to be you got 90% for showing up to work and the other 10% if you did anything for the shareholders. Now he only has 10% for showing up to work. And in a lousy housing market, Frank's got to struggle for his other 90%.
But the I guess one of the outrages, as you say, is when CEOs are getting these staggering amounts of money and losing money for the shareholders. That's the other side of that equation. They're getting compensated.
You point to Pfizer, and I until you pulled it all together in one place, I was not clear what had gone on with Pfizer. And in a way, it's I'm sure that's why you included it. It brings all the cast together.
Yeah.
In a very not pretty way. Can you do a capsule version of that?
Well, the really ugly part about, and Pfizer has had a really good board of directors. I mean, they're good people, they do good things. Indeed, they forced Mr. McKinnell to retire. And they've gone on a number of other advances. So it's an interesting case because you had a good board. But the pattern, it genuinely upsetting, just you know, to have a fifth emphasis on your own adjective, because the pattern has become one that the preponderance of compensation is focused now in areas where you weren't previously legally obligated to report. So in the case of Mr. McKinnell at Pfizer, where he was getting it was through a pension system, which the extent of which wasn't publicly disclosed until a couple of years before he quit.
The irony in that is...
that's right. He got a fast retirement.
Out of a pension system.
And I don't know whether, you know, words are not self-executing. There are always very clever people who can find ways of making something legal when it isn't the intent of the people who wrote the law. But hopefully the new disclosure requirements that have been put into effect in the last year or two will at least enable shareholders to know what people are being paid. But the Pfizer case was an example of where the stealth compensation came in, which makes the level of pay even more egregious.
Well,
it also brings in the Business Roundtable. We really haven't talked about the Business Roundtable, and that seems to be a key piece of this.
Let's do that when we come back. And just as a summation on the Pfizer, $254 million is the number I remember as compensation, having lost 40% of the share value for the stockholders at the time of his exit. Thank you for being with us. We'll be back in a moment. More on the Business Roundtable with Robert A.G. Monks. Stay tuned.